The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to Masterclass US Market with me, Giuliana Colangelo. This show has been designed to demystify the US market for Italian wineries through interviews with experts in sales and distribution, social media, communications, and so much more. We will quiz each of our esteemed guests at the end of each episode to solidify the lessons that we've learned. So sharpen your pencils, get out your notebooks, and join us each week to learn more about the US market. Hello, welcome to Masterclass US Wine Market on the Italian Wine Podcast. Very excited to be here at Vin Italy with Robert Joseph, my guest for today's show. It's an exciting time as always. We're on day one, so still have some energy, but you know, I'm sure that'll change quickly. Robert, thank you for being here today.
Great to be.
Robert needs no introduction. He's been on the podcast before, but today we're going to focus on what's happening right now in the wine industry and the Italian wine market, and specifically as we sit here at Vin Italy, one of the largest wine fairs in the world. So Robert, just let's start basically, like, what do you think is happening right now in the wine industry?
I'm going to separate the Italian sector from everything else because I think everything is a sector. My friend Tim Atkin wrote a very good piece recently in which he looked at what happened to the Titanic, and we all kind of imagined that the Titanic was sailing along and hey, wow, there's an iceberg, except there were warnings. There were lots of warnings about the dangers of that piece of particular part of the world where they were sailing. And I think that today, if we're in the wine industry, if we're not looking at the warnings that are being sent to us by a number of people, then we are going to deserve what's coming our way. So what are those warnings? Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, climate change. We get that. It's right. Quite easy. But we also have the World Health Organization saying that all alcohol is bad for us. Okay, second thing. Thirdly, we have a lot of people who are clearly falling out of love or failing to fall in love with wine specifically. Mm-hmm. And lastly, we have a growth in the range of alternatives. Right. Now, you put all of those together, and to me, that is a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at data from the US, I'm looking at data from France, I'm looking at various pieces of information. And the one thing that I will not bet on in 2024 is that more people are going to be drinking more wine in 2030 mm-hmm. than are doing it today. So the only questions we have in what I am expecting to be a smaller market is who is going to lose most share.
Right. Yeah, it seems like we're kind of facing what a phrase I've recently learned, the gravity problem, right? We can't only go so quickly up a hill when you're running, right? You have gravity pushing you down. And it seems like in the wine industry, we continue to make more and more wine when we see all these headwinds coming against us of lower consumption, health concerns, and alternatives. So how as an industry do we adapt and change so that we're not trying to, you know, push against gravity, but we're adapting to what's happening in the market?
I like the term gravity here, but I think the interesting thing is you look at the latest Wine Market Council reports and so on. We haven't, I'm looking at the US very specifically, when I started to look at the US market, which would be 30, 40 years ago, 30% of Americans drink wine. Most of the wine going into America is drunk by a very, it's the 80-20, it's not even 30, but mm-hmm. basically most of the wine in America is drunk by a very small number of people. Hey presto, 2024, the same thing applies. We have not created, we've not grown the market. We mm-hmm. have, again, the Wine Market Council report suggests that about 20% are doing all of the drinking that we would right. consider to be wine drinking. In France, it's not that different, except the difference is in France, once upon a time, everyone drank wine. Mm-hmm. It's diminished today down to about 30, 35. So essentially in the world, globally, there are exceptions. I mean, I work in Georgia, I'm making wine in Georgia, so that's a difference. But across the world, we're talking about around one third to one quarter of the population drinks wine. But mm-hmm. those of us who drink wine, imagine that everybody else drinks wine. we imagine that everybody else not only drinks wine, but they're interested in the stuff we're interested in. They're interested in origin, in food and wine matching. They're interested in
treatment,
all that sort of stuff. And of the people who drink wine who are only 25 to 30% of the market, huge numbers of people, those people are actually drinking barefoot. They're drinking, initially they're drinking Pinot Grigio. They're drinking, you know, easy to drink beverages. And if you say to them, where does the Pinot Grigio come from? They don't know or care. And hey presto, it may well come from Hungary or Moldova or somewhere else, or New California.
Italian Wine Podcast, part of the Mama Jumbo Shrimp family.
So how do you think, Robert, there's some ways that as an industry, and maybe let's start with the Italian wine industry specifically, since we're here at Vinitaly, can start steering the ship to avoid this iceberg that we're coming up against?
I think that we need to look very, very laterally, think laterally. So the first thing to say is packaging. Why do we have to have 75 centiliter bottles for everything?
Good point.
Are so many people still using corks? Let's go down that route. But also in terms of styles, one of the things that I'm fascinated about the wine industry, and I'm actually, I would say, exasperated, is the number of people who are so ready to denigrate consumers who are drinking the kind of wine that they don't like. So Stella Rosa, fruit-flavored, spice-flavored wines, I don't necessarily want to drink those wines. I personally am not out there drinking bourbon barrel Mondavi Cabernet. However, the people I hear denigrating those products and the drinkers of those products are ignoring the fact that those are people who are keeping grapes in the ground.
Absolutely.
They're keeping the industry going. We take those out and that's a whole chunk of wine. So in this country, we do have a history in Italy. We have a history of Moscato. We have a history of light rosé, a history of all sorts of things.
Lambrusco.
And we all went away from the sweet commercial Lambrusco that we are now. Great, it's a serious wine. Hey, a lot of people don't like the Lambruscos that we like.
Exactly.
So I think that we need to go out there, and I think we're obsessed as an industry with education, and I keep coming back to this with shoes. We don't have I've got an image of a shoe and boot education trust, which teaches people how to buy shoes and the difference between different kinds of boots. No, people go out and they find the shoes, the boots they like, they wear them. That is actually what most people do with wine. And we are moving too far. We've always been too far away from that. But wine is a beverage.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think another thing, you know, I look at fashion a lot for inspiration, but just to see what they're doing. And they build brand equity, too. When you buy a Gucci belt, you're buying an identity. And I don't think the wine industry, outside of very few brands and categories, namely, I would say champagne, has done that very well of building true brand equity. Wine, like fashion, is a luxury product, but don't know that as a category, the brands have as successfully created that transfer of brand equity to the consumer.
Well, let's look at, I've just written something for Meininger's International where I do a column every week. In France, if you go to a Carrefour supermarket, they were selling Bordeaux with a Chateau name for €1.90 a bottle.
I heard about this.
And we've seen, in 166, you know, these are like $2 for a bottle of Bordeaux. And on the same time, those people were offering Mouton Cadet as a special deal at about three times that price. And a special deal. Now, the whole point is, do I believe that Mouton Cadet is three times better than the wines they were? No. But Mouton Cadet, whether I like it or I don't like it, has got brand equity.
Right.
And that is relevant. And it's, you know, let's look at Pinot Grigio market. Let's look at the Prosecco market. Gallo has done a brilliant job of giving some brand value to a small of the wines they're involved with. But everybody else, and I do some consultancy in Moldova at the moment, for example, you know, basically there are a lot of people who want to buy Moldovan Pinot Grigio that they're going to put into a bottle or a bag in box or a cask or whatever you want to call it. is it going to say Moldova in big letters? No, it's going to say Pinot Grigio, and it could next year it could come from Hungary, the year after it could come from Spain. It doesn't matter, but that, and I don't have a problem with that any more than I have a problem that the fact that here in Verona, I picked up a bottle of olive oil in a store yesterday that is, it's not Italian, you know, it's a product of Europe. In other words, it's a Spanish, Greek, who knows what. The average consumer is very happy to drink to use an olive oil that comes from various places, just as they're very happy for their coffee or their tea to come from it. Wine isn't that different, except that we think it's different.
Right. We're overcomplicating it by drilling down to these microcosms that it's just impossible for a consumer to understand. You know, Robert, you have always been forward-thinking when it comes to the use of digital and digital marketing and social media. What do you think right now about how wineries and the wine industry is using digital marketing?
Some people do it very well, obviously. But, I mean, I think you've really got to step back and say, why is anybody buying wine rather than another drink? Or are they buying this wine rather than another wine? And our tradition was, it's a score, or it's a... Karen McNeil's written a great piece recently about wine writing, and you know, is wine writing dying? And I love Karen, and I think she's a star act, but most people never read... I used to be a wine writer, a wine critic. Nobody read that stuff, or very few people read that stuff. Scores did matter more than wine writing, and today we've kind of moved on beyond scores. And today, the label matters. The look of the stuff matters. Now, in cocktails, spirits, it's easier to make something that looks good. But the wine industry has got to start thinking a lot more broadly about how can I engage the attention of the 25-year-old drinker. Because today, the danger, and the wine industry is in turn back to the Titanic, the idea is, oh, the 25-year-old will become a wine drinker when they're 35.
Right, they'll age into the
However,
category.
The statistics suggest, and this is true in France as much as the US, that we've got a whole lot of 35-year-olds, 45-year-olds, and even 50-plus-year-olds who haven't got the habit. And my question is, at what point do we think they're going to get it?
Right.
Are we waiting until they're 60?
Good, very good question. All, like you said before, there's so many factors to why they're likely not aging into the wine category, whether it's health-related, alternatives, sustainability, as you mentioned as well, climate change. So there's so many reasons. You mentioned, Robert, you know, you were a wine writer, and you mentioned Karen McNeil. There's been a lot of negativity in the wine media around consumers not drinking. The fact that those stories are reaching mainstream publications to me is interesting, because to use your example of shoes again, you don't see stories and headlines about consumers not wearing a certain type of leather or not wearing a certain type of shoe anymore. So sometimes it feels like our industry news is getting into the consumer mainstream and almost is self-prophesizing the issues that we have. How do you feel as a former wine writer?
I take your point, and it's a bit like, oh, you know, the media is full of people saying, hey, the Titanic, which is it's on its first maiden voyage today, maybe is not as safe and unsinkable as we thought it was. Well, if that's true, then maybe that's not a bad thing. If I'd read that before I got onto that ship, maybe I wouldn't have had the problem. The wine industry, I think, needs a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are giving it that wake-up call.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that wine hasn't changed that much over a long time. The beer industry has evolved. The spirits people have evolved. Now, we've got a lot of things going on. We've got zero alcohol. Wine's coming along, which are better than other they've ever been before. I'm working on a couple of projects myself, but I know that my zero alcohol wine could be competing with sparkling tea. It's going to be competing with kombucha. It's going to be competing with all sorts of different and proxies. So I think that I wrote something not that long ago about the divine right of kings, which was, go back a few centuries in Europe, if you were a monarch, you know, nothing was going to shift you or push you off your throne, and actually we have this thing called droit de seigneur. Anything you did was okay. The wine industry is not that different, because we're thinking, oh, we've had wine for 8,000 years. What's going to stop that? Okay, let's think about this for a second. We've had child labor for most of 8,000 years.
Good point.
We've had women being subjugated and ethnic subjugation of various kinds for 8,000 years. Most of us think, actually, we don't want that anymore. So why do we assume that we're going to stop the stuff that we don't want,
mm-hmm.
and the stuff we do like is going to survive. There's no guarantee that's going to happen. And I think the wine industry needs to address these things.
Right, absolutely.
In a way that it hasn't. But it's not just wine, it's going to be the alcohol industry. But you know, we talk about the World Health Organization, WHO.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger threat to wine that nobody's talking about is WHOOP, the bands
mm-hmm.
that people are wearing. And it's going to be the Apple Watch. There are going to be things saying, hey, you had two glasses of wine last night.
Right.
Your body hasn't recovered.
Yep.
And that's not going to be anything to do with people in white coats sending a message and putting a warning on a label. That's going to be something that an item I'm wearing
right.
is going to say to me. And so I think to take this one stage further, we as an industry are going to have to wake up to understand that maybe in the future, wine is not going to be something that we have every day with mm-hmm. our lunch and dinner. Maybe it's something we don't have three or four glasses of. It's something that will be, that we'll enjoy, but we will enjoy it in this word we all use, moderation,
mm-hmm.
and we'll take delight in it, but it won't cost $2, $3, $4, $5, whatever.
Right.
It's going to be stuff that we're going to pay for.
Right, absolutely. So moving the market up, focusing on moderation, but you know, also at the same time increasing the value of the product so that you're still winning. I think right now we know that there's a lot of wine sitting out there, whether it's in a distributor warehouse, it's in a cellar, you know, that is not going to be drunk and that's going to be destroyed. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality that we're facing. As we wind down, Robert, I'd like to ask three quick questions to all of my guests. Question number one, what is your number one tip for mastering the wine market?
I think if you're a producer, know who you are, know what you're doing and who you're talking to. It's the same as being a stand-up or being a musician or whatever you are. If you're a jazz musician, you know that only 1% of people are actually listening.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the people you're talking to. There's no point in trying to talk to everybody. Now, if we can actually be a great jazz musician and you can try to convert a few hip-hop fans, classical fans, or whatever, fine. But essentially make sure that the jazz fans know who you are and what you're doing and do collectively with other people in the same boat, try and build that jazz fan base from 1% to 1.2, 1.5.
Right.
And in wine, that's where putting wine in cans, that's mm-hmm. where zero alcohol and so on, are all going to be part of a process.
So really know, understand your core audience and think about how the behaviors of your core audience and how to replicate those.
How do we bring people in?
Right, exactly. Great, absolutely. Number two question, what is something you might have told your younger self about selling wine or working in the wine industry?
Don't focus over much on the product.
Mm.
Essentially, hey, this is a wonderful glass of wine, it's gorgeous, it's wonderful, it's worth $50 or $5 or $200, whatever. You've got to remember is that somebody is going to buy that with $50 or $100 or $10 of their money. They could spend that in another way.
Absolutely.
So essentially, I'm not competing with other wines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even just competing with other drinks. I'm competing with other ways that people can spend their cash. And I have got to actually justify that. So what I'd say is we're all in the entertainment business.
Right.
Wine is an experiential product. It's mm-hmm. experiential from the moment of purchase
mm-hmm.
right the way through to the moment of consumption. And if you're experiential, then you've got to actually think about why is anybody going to give me this money for this experience?
What is the experience you're providing
yeah.
as well
yeah.
as a brand? Yeah, very important. Finally, number three, a little easier question. We're all traveling a lot. We're here in Italy. What's one of your favorite travel tips for being on the road?
Don't drink on long-haul flights. It's a really, really, really simple. And stay up until 10 o'clock at night, whatever, wherever you are. But I think explore.
Mm.
The thing to me is, you know, here I'm going to be here in Italy for 3 days. And I've got friends. I'm going to come straight out of this booth and go straight to see a friend in the Piemonte, or other friends in other places. But go and find the things you've never tried before.
Mm.
If you are the person who will explore, you are a rare human being. Most people are sheep, right? And that's fine. And you know, and there's nothing wrong with sheep. We need the wool. We need to eat lamb. In America, we don't eat much lamb, but okay. But most of us, in terms of people probably listening to this podcast, most of the people who have got interest in wine, we're people who should say, I've tried this. Let's try that. Mm-hmm. And because I don't like it, why don't I like it? Why do other people like it?
Right.
Why, even though, so the bourbon barrel wine that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Why do people drink it? My friend Randall Graham, I think, thinks it's an aberration and shouldn't exist. I love Randall to death. Bourbon barrel wine exists because a lot of people like drinking bourbon.
Yep.
And why should we not give them something to drink that happens to involve planting and growing and doing stuff with grapes?
Absolutely.
So try to understand why people are buying the stuff that you don't like, and try to understand why people might be persuaded to drink the stuff you do like. And to do that, come to a place like Vinitaly, wander around the halls, and go into regions, go up to producers that you've never met before, that you've never tried before, and it's like food, it's like anything else. Be ready to blow your mind, to question stuff, and have experiences that you might never have had before.
I love that advice. I think, you know, we get trapped, like you said, in some of these same cycles in this industry, so really looking at it with fresh eyes. I love that advice. Well, thank you, Robert, for joining me on this busy Vinitaly Sunday. I really appreciate
you being
here.
I'm sorry we don't have a glass in front of us, but cheers anyway.
Soon enough. Cheers.
Thank you for joining me today. Stay tuned each week for new episodes of Masterclass US Wine Market with me, Juliana Colangelo. And remember, if you enjoyed today's show, hit the like and follow buttons wherever you get your podcasts.